the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, it's probably not everybody's favorite subject, but we're going to talk about estate planning today and the importance of having your estate plan in order. Whether you're a young family starting out in life, maybe you just had your first kid or you bought your first home, or maybe you're entering the golden years of your life and thinking about retirement. Joining me on the program is Kevin Day. He's from Trespin Day and Associates. And Kevin, let's talk about estate planning. There's all kinds of documents that are involved, but why it's important for everyone. I don't care if you are a single individual, you get your first job, maybe you bought your first property, you're a young family, maybe you're midway through your life, or maybe entering into retirement, why we need to think about this in terms of putting our affairs always in order.
Well, you want to avoid probate, and most people have heard that, oh, you want to avoid probate, and it will save you time and money, but rarely do attorneys say how much money that is. Some states, like California, actually have a probate code, 10,800XX, that is a table which pays the attorney. And essentially, it's going to be 4% for 4% of the entire estate, and not just the equity, but the fair market value. And the threshold in, let's say, California is $150,000 of all property, or $50,000 of real property, whichever is least. And I don't know that you could own an outhouse in California and not hit that threshold. So remember, it's the fair market value, not your equity. And so you've got to probate if you have any property. Most states, and I have a chart, your listeners can email you and you can forward those to us, but we have a chart of, we have all the states, and most states are between $35,000 and $45,000 is a what's considered a small estate that will be an abbreviated form of probate.
Kevin, let me ask you this. In California, we see trusts used more and more in estate planning, less so on the East Coast. In fact, I've run into all kinds of difficulties with a lot of my clients in the Midwest or East where trusts aren't used as they are here in California. In fact, one of my clients was told by an attorney, well, probate's no big deal. Why is it a big deal? It's not just the cost that you just mentioned, which can be substantial depending on the size of the estate, but it's also more important, all of the delays and the inability to make decisions without going through a court.
So it's a loose analogy, but I think clients get a, and your listeners get a sense of what it does. It's kind of the corporate form for a human. Let's say my mom, she's 94 and still living at home, and she's a pistol. Let's say a single person like that, she's widowed. If she dies without the magic language that can only be contained in a trust, when she dies, her world freezes without government authority to do anything. So that's done through a probate judge. And so we go down and we petition the judge. We're paying a lawyer a lot of money, and to get, let's say, me appointed as an executor. The whole point of probate is to give time for my sister, other cousins and relatives, and my mom's friends to come forward and say, oh, Antoinette loved Kevin, but she thought he was a financial idiot. He should not be the executor. Or no, they were estranged. They never talked with one another. You know, the sister is the better one, or commercial trustee. So at the first 9 months, you know, most people say it takes like 2 years on regular course. It takes usually 9 months for them to even appoint the personal representative or executor or executrix. In the meantime, the banks don't care and electricity doesn't care. So if I don't have enough wealth in my own pocket to advance and then petition the court to get reimbursed that it was really on my mom's behalf, her estate, client's behalf, then they're paying a $200 an hour court-appointed trustee for the 9 months to keep her estate alive, paying mortgages and electricity and all that before I get appointed. Then, I mean, they really haven't looked at the trust yet. They're just trying to give time. The judge hasn't looked at anything. That's when it begins. So it does take 2 years, even in the simplest of estates.
Let's talk about some of the other reasons one might want to have that. It's not only for protection of spouses, let's say between a married couple or even the children, because we do know that people are living longer. One of the problems you have when you age, issues of Alzheimer's, dementia. So you need some kind of protection to protect a vulnerable, let's say, surviving spouse.
Yes. So one, even though before the Bush administration, the estate just creeped up. It was, you know, 8-10 years while it was, you know, $650 was the entire gifting exemption, and then 750, then a million. And it was a long time. Then Bush jumped it up to large amounts. But before that time, it was very customary. And so those of you that have older trusts and you're very happy with the distribution, you have to be careful, because it was customary for everybody, including our law firm, to say the B trust, which is the bypass trust, when the first spouse dies, let's put our total tax exemption into it because we want to preserve it, because it's only $1 million, but you had a $3 million or a $2 million estate. And then the survivor would use his or her half of the money or whatever was left. In my example of $3 million, would have $2 million to invade. But let's say it was only $1 million or five. If they ran out, they could invade under prescription, usually a 5-and-5 rule, 5% or $5,000 a month. And that was fine back then. But now with $5 million gift exemption, plus the cost of living that makes it above that, you have a $3 million or a $2 million estate. All $2 million is going into the B trust. And now the survivor is bound by this 5-and-5 rule. So you do have to revisit your estate, but you want to put in protections if you have a blended family, the AB trust. But a lot of people say, oh, now your estate is so small, you don't need the AB provisions. Well, you may. You just need to use it properly to lawsuit protect a certain portion, to protect a blended family's heir as well. And of course, we have the ancillary documents that we'll probably talk about next regarding the powers of attorney. But you want to make sure your trust is crafted to your reality right now, a projected future, any changes, and what your priorities and concerns are, to make sure you have a good retirement.
Now, before we get to some of these other issues, you know, the one thing about, at least with a married couple with a trust, an AB trust or a disclaimer trust, you can shelter or get double the exemption, which is a little over $11.4 million right now. But Kevin, let's talk about, there was an increase in the exemption under George W. Bush, but it sunsetted in the year 2010. They had nothing agreed upon that year, but then in 2011, they came up with a new figure, a new exemption. Let's also talk about the Trump bill, because it too sunsets in the year 2025, meaning it goes back to the old rates unless they come up with something new. What do you tell clients, like if, you know, let's say a wealthy client, and right now I'm thinking, hey, I'm sitting pretty good. The exemption's 11.4. Multiply that by two with my wife, I can pass $22 million. I'm scot-free. But that's the law today. That may not be the law in 2025.
Yes. And if I was a gambling man, which I'm not, but especially with the current politics, the sunset will run supreme and it will drop back down to the $5 million per person. And if you're a married couple right now that is at $8 million, but you're younger or mid-aged, the rule is 72, by the time you die, you're well over that. So you have to start, if you have children, you want to start gifting campaigns into irrevocable trust. So you divorce proof their inheritance and that sort of thing. But you want to start planning with the assumption that it will go back down to five. And depending on how politics go, you know, we've got a lot of expenses. It might even go down. But with if there's a stalemate, we know that it's going back down to five for sure. And it will impact some people.
So we have the issue of estate taxes. We talked about probate. Let's talk about some of the other documents that are necessary. And I'm thinking powers of attorney, medical powers, and then let's say a pour over will, how these documents supplement and sort of kind of bulletproof the estate plan.
Yes. For a married couple, we have 11 different documents that make the comprehensive estate plan. And the powers of attorney, we have a power of attorney for financial matters, a power of attorney for health matters, the directives to physicians regarding artificial life support, of course. And these are giving powers to the correct people because, again, without it, the court is designating what it feels is the right person. My daughter, probably even when she was 15, if I said, you know, if this is happening to me and my brainwave is flat, I need to be unplugged, I'm giving you that power, she would have been able to do it. My son, who's a very brilliant man, he's, you know, in Cal Poly, SLO in architecture, he's a great guy. And he, we've talked about it, he has that same philosophy. If it's really bad, I don't want to be caught in that body or giving this pain to my family. I'd want to be unplugged. But if I gave him the power, you know, even if he was an adult, he's 35 when I die or get into this situation, and he had to authorize that, he would go to his grave at 85 thinking in his heart he killed his dad. So I would never, he would be great for the financial power. Usually they're the same person, but you need to think about the people that you're giving this responsibility to. There are proclivities. Somebody might be great to rear your children, which is the pour over will, but they wouldn't be good with financial. So you need to really think about these things. The pour over will, which is P-O-U-R, like pour a pitcher, it has two main roles. It's a catch net for anything that you didn't technically put in your trust. And therefore, you know, you, as you said at the very beginning, people don't like contemplating their death. If it takes them years of going to 3 or 4 or 5 seminars on living trusts, it still takes them 2 more years to pull the trigger. And once they do, they want to put it on the shelf and forget about it. And then they go out to Hawaii visiting a friend and there's some condo that's a great deal and they buy it and they don't put it in the name of the trust. They put it in their own name. The pour over will means that it will go by the same instructions that are in the trust. Or another one that has come up not too infrequently, every couple of years we'll have somebody that perhaps their aunt dies, they're getting an inheritance, they get hit by the proverbial bus before the distribution, and now there's this distribution to Kevin Day, and Kevin Day has already passed, and I didn't have time to put it into my trust. The other really powerful and important aspect of any will, if you have minor children, is the guardianship provisions. And this almost, in my mind, is more important than all the rest of it, because the courts have 50 other cases that day of who, what kids they're going to give to who. And let's say, you know, I love my sister to death. My dad was a sixth grade school teacher down here in Del Mar. My sister became a teacher. I went to the dark side and became a lawyer. I get my teaching fix by you graciously having me on here. And she loves children, but she's a very different style than my wife and I. My wife comes from Michigan, Iowa stock, hard working, good work ethic, outdoor and all this. Any one of her family members would be fine. The one that the court would give it to would be the one that lives right out of Washington, D.C. and actually does have a mansion with real pillars and has a bunch of rooms because their kids are gone. And that makes sense. Oh, you got the rooms. You've got the kids. Well, I don't, and my wife, don't want the court deciding who's going to rear our children based on the rooms. The ones that we actually chose were one sister that's a manager at Home Depot and her husband's a handyman. They're going to give the right perspective and of the universe and attention to detail to be surrogate parents and teachers because we're not there. They're going to sell our house. They can get extra rooms. It's really not important. We want a loving, alert environment. You want to direct it. You don't want the judge picking the right, quote unquote, right person for you.
A lot of people don't get the documents you and I have been speaking about because they think, oh, you know, a husband and wife, they buy a house, they hold it as joint tenants. And they think, okay, if something happens to the husband, it goes to the wife. If something happens to the wife, it goes to the husband. Why that really isn't an estate plan?
Yes, because it's not controlling for all the other factors that you have in life and the things that you can take advantage of. You can get, if it's in a trust and you have the right provisions, you can get step up in basis on half of it, which allows more depreciation by the survivor. And of course, that kind of objective depends on the size of the estate and their overall planning. But there's just holding it as joint tenants is not much of an estate plan at all.
And let's talk about something else that many people don't realize that came in with Ronald Reagan. And that's something called a stepped up basis in cost and how assets can be all the capital gains forgiven. And for those that own real estate, especially things like investment or rental real estate that's fully depreciated, can be reappreciated or depreciated upon the death of a spouse. My parents came from Europe. They were more prone towards real estate investments. And upon my dad's death, the properties that were fully depreciated got stepped up to market value, and my mom was able to redepreciate those properties and save substantially on taxes.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that you can do, even in a living trust with the right provisions in it, and especially because it's revocable and changeable, we can do that if somebody becomes ill and the expectation is that they would die appreciably sooner than the other spouse. But the biggest horror that happens over and over and over again as parents, and it can be driven by the parents to gift to the children or adult children that say, you know, these are big headaches. Why don't you gift to all of us now so you don't have a problem later? And the parents go, okay. They're making a gift and it does not take away, it does not get the step up in basis that Reagan put in place. But if you die with those properties, then there's a step up in basis, as you said, to the then market value. And especially if it's a family home or any appreciated property that's been held a long time, this is a huge win. Now you, as you said, with your parents, you get to reappreciate them up, and now you get to start, the heir gets to start depreciating from the current value. My dad, the sixth grade school teacher, bought his little house in Del Mar with 8-10 inches of ocean and looking down to La Jolla to Oceanside for $36,000. Well, it certainly isn't worth that today. And I can't tell you how many people, and they don't do it early. It's usually when a parent gets, you know, 80 or 85 and we're starting to get care and home and all these other things. And then they go, let's simplify your life, gift now. And they're doing such a disservice to the family.
One never knows what life circumstances are, who dies first, what your circumstances, you end up in a retirement home, or your assets appreciate, or you have another issue that we're dealing with today as a result of parents aging is elder abuse, and how that can also, you can have documents to protect yourself. Let's talk about that for a moment, because that's becoming increasingly a bigger issue as people age.
Yes, that's one of the reasons why you want to, one, you can document, you can have the authority to people, other people looking in, or you can give co powers or co-trustee positions to balance that out. Certainly having a third party trustee alleviates that. Most people, they'll go, oh, I'm going to make, you know, Sally the trustee because she has an MBA and she's the most responsible. It is a horrible burden, even fairly well adjusted families that aren't dysfunctional. The other children, their hearts are wrenched. They're not thinking straight. This is a traumatic time. They're thinking, why didn't mom and dad love me? And they gave her, you know, this, you know, power. And now what is she doing behind closed doors? It just ends up being a big headache. So maybe making a committee or using a third party trustee. There are inexpensive trustees. You don't have to use the bank trustee that charges a lot. But you can put those powers in. And also you want to get these powers put in place while you're still fairly young and are thinking about the personalities of the players, because we do get addled. No matter how alert we are for our particular age, certain things start to depreciate, and you want to put those safeguards in well in advance.
So when you add all this up, I wonder if we could just break it down. Let's take three kind of circumstances, cases. You've got a young couple that are starting out in life. They want to start a family, or maybe they just had their first kid. That's one. You've got a middle-aged couple that are now accumulated some assets. They have equity in a home, 401k plans, maybe life insurance. And then you have a couple that have now headed into retirement. They do have quite a few assets, maybe a free and clear home, pensions, and things like that. Those three cases, what would you advise them to do? I mean, from basics to more complicated.
Yes. So with the young couple, it's good for them because we found with older people that don't even have trust yet and come across it, they're very hesitant to do any kind of estate planning, even a will, which still means you have a probate, because they often, maybe 3 out of 10 people go, well, that's telling the universe I'm giving up. I'm doing it now because I'm ready to die. So you want to get it done early when you buy your first property, when you are expecting children. You want those things clear because you want to pick who's going to rear your children. You don't want the government doing it through the court. But also you do it and it feels more, as a young person, you feel more like it's a business entity, and you start getting to be comfortable with the use of it. So you do take it off the shelf every once in a while, so you get the most out of it. Mid-age, the biggest thing is we don't know when that proverbial bus is going to hit us. And since we know we're all on that same conveyor belt, do it earlier, because, you know, you say, I'm young and healthy, I'll deal with that later. Well, we know that we need it. Go ahead and make use of it now. It also allows people that might be good at business and socking money away, but they don't attend the well-roundedness or finances of their business. And we've found some people that when they do their estate planning and when they gather all the assets so we can do all the transfers, because just having a trust doesn't help you. We need to do the transfers. A lot of attorneys don't do that, and I think that's malpractice. Then they become aware of things that kind of grew organically, and they didn't really know the size of their estate or the condition of balance. Older people certainly need to get it done. There's going to be tax consequences on larger states, and certainly after the 2025, where it comes back down, where we do need to look at those things. And if you've had a trust for a while, one, we need to make sure it's up to date. We don't subscribe to, oh, bring it in every year and give us $150 and we'll review our trust. We know what our trust is. We better for you. We'd keep copies, electronic and everything. But things don't change that frequently. going in every 3 years, more appropriate. And if there's a law change, your lawyers better be advising you. So we will send a letter to everyone. Oh, the law changed. This affects you on Section A. Some people care about it. Some people don't. We have a fix and it's $300 patch. Or everyone needs to change this because there is a change in law and this is harmful to you. And we have a patch and we'll do the amendment and it's $300, whatever it would be. Things change. The bigger things are not the trust itself. It's what's happened in your life. Do you have grandchildren now? Do you have so much money that you don't want to give everything to your children and then they take care of your grandchildren? You want to give half to your children and then set up a children's trust that runs what are called dynasty trust. Dynasty provisions can be put in any kind of trust and have it be the education fund and first home fund for all grandchildren, irrespective of how successful their parents or your children are. Or you were really wealthy and gave a lot to charity, and then you were mostly in real estate, and 2008 comes along, and you want to redo it to, no, I don't want to give to charity now. We've really been beat up. I want to take care of my children and grandchildren. So that's really the events that happen, and there are longer gaps between that.
Well, the important thing I think you're emphasizing here, no matter what your circumstances, you need a minimum an estate plan, even if it's just wills, powers of attorney, and durable medical powers, two more complex trusts, depending on the circumstances. And really what dictates a lot of these changes are changes in the tax laws or maybe changes personally, whether it's family, health, or wealth. Kevin, as we close, you operate here in California. If anybody in California needs to do some updating or thinking of an estate plan, how could they get in contact with your firm?
Our phone number is 858-755-6672. That's 858-755-6672, or Kevin at TRESP, that's TRESP, day.com. Kevin at TRESP, day.com. Yes. And we happen to be blue skied. We can do living trusts in every state, and we're proud of that. We also do complex estate planning, things like charitable remainder trust, charitable lead trust. We're acclaimed in the asset protection area in the offshore trusts as well as domestic trusts for high net worth individuals that need that kind of protection, or high liability small entrepreneurs. One of the other things, just in closing, is privacy. It's underrated, and I think it's because we're lawsuit protection. We have a big lawsuit protection department here at Trust Day, is privacy. When you hear that the owner of the Miami Dolphins had this, and this asset, and this is what things are valued, and who's going to get it, it's because they had a probate. Probate, like any other law case in the United States, is open to the public. And that means there's a lot of unscrupulous people. If you go down to your local probate office clerk, there's usually a couple of picnic tables there with a bunch of young people going up and getting a file and writing stuff down and taking it back. They're looking at wills, which are public, or the notices that have been developed if you're intestate and without a will. And those people get calls. And Billy, if Billy only has his Volkswagen and his college bookcase, and he's told, oh, I'm really sorry about dad dying, but we see that there's a cabin up in Vail, Colorado, we can come down with cash tomorrow and buy it, he might say yes. He's very disoriented. And so you want to protect your children from that kind of invasion, and a trust, because it avoids probate, is private. They won't see who is getting what assets and what the values are and who they are. So you want to do that protection, and that can be done with a simple, normal living trust.
I'm always amazed when we hear of all of these celebrities, famous people like Prince, who had a $300 million estate, and we learn all about it is because he didn't have an estate plan. Great point, Kevin. As always, it's a pleasure to have you. I'd like to have you back again. I'd like to talk about asset protection trust, offshore trust, and some of the more complex things and address that issue in a separate interview. Thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed it, Jim.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.